This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row Studios, in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Oh, I've got the tingling.
You do?
Yeah, full on. I've got it. I've had it for about 48 hours.
I love it when you wear that sweater that's sort of part cardigan, part sweater, a little bit of a roll neck. You're grandfatherly in that.
That's the... I'm trying to lower my age perception.
And just look grandfatherly. Yeah, it's good. It's working for you.
Trying to be younger than my emotional age, David. Yeah. Oh, I am actually... Part of me is feeling ecstatic.
Yeah.
Like we're charging
Chelsea
towards...
loss.
No, we're just charging towards BlazerCon.
Yeah.
It's like two tickets, three, four.
Three tickets left. If you want to come with four mates, don't bother. With three mates, don't bother. One of you's going to have to, like, take the fall.
Just get a bunk over the wharf and the other mate. But yeah. I just think it's just, like, such a colossal undertaking and there's so much to be done between now and then. And I'm not sleeping so well. I'm just dreaming about, you know, getting it right for Barry Hearn.
Somehow I don't think Barry Hearn's that stressed
getting
about
it. For Charlie
Do you think Barry Hearn's stressed about
Charlie
it?
Charlie is a red.
Oh, we'll all be working
Very
for Charlie
exacting.
As a red one day.
You know, she's like a nice kid, but that rider that he's got on his...
I know.
It's
tough to get Smarties in the United States anymore.
It's incredibly
exacting.
You
can't get that many Smarties, let alone only pink ones.
Oh, and, you know, the Fox guys coming in.
Yeah.
We'll make it nice for them.
Yeah.
You know, ginger friendly.
Yeah.
But it's been a sad week for sports journalism, Davey.
Mm-hmm.
With the closing.
Yeah.
Hashtag Grantland RIP. Bit sad. Incredibly sad, to be candid.
It's alas. Poor Grantland. We knew you well.
We did.
And we owe you a lot. We owe Grantland a lot. That was the home of our podcast, not initially, but it's where our podcast went on regularly after the 2010
World Cup.
Tiny
little tent.
Yeah.
We pitched up inside their camp. Bill Simmons, the magical Jacoby.
Do you remember the New York Times ad that they put out for the Grantland Podcast Network?
Oh, they had so much money.
It's one of the most exciting things. It's one of the most exciting things ever. They took an ad.
It was when they launched the podcast network.
Yes. And they took an ad. I don't think it was half a page, maybe a quarter of a page. But it's the most beautiful ad, and our name was
in
on it.
The New York Times.
In the New York Times.
Grantland.
And it was exciting. It was I felt part of the big
I
time.
I felt like we were working in the media in the 1940s during the golden age of radio.
We liked it. Yep. We remember it well.
We're going to launch you. We got $1 million.
Yeah.
Oh, those are the days. So much talent, though. I mean, we were dwarfed by the likes of Jonah Kerry. What a wonderful bloke.
Yeah, Zach Lowe. I like his podcast.
Rembert, an all-round amazing human being. Yep. Brian Phillips, a rare talent. I'm sure they will all find a home, David.
Yeah, I think they probably already have.
But what a remarkable platform it was for Men in Blazers at the outset. I think for both of us, we learned quickly, platform's crucial. You can shout as loud as you want from the valley floor. Not that many people would hear you.
Yeah, it's very, very true. Thank you, Grantland, everybody associated with Grantland. And, you know, everybody there spoke to Jacoby this week. It's, you know, sad times. Very sad.
I mean, the suddenness was what made it a shock more than the actual demise. I think in 100 years, in fact, I know in 100 years, whatever technology they have then, maybe like podcasts will be beamed directly into your cortex. Someone will build a new sports platform and call it Grantland.
we're doing the past again and again and again.
As a tribute to Bill Simmons' flickering endeavour and not to Grantland Rice.
Yeah.
So I know it will come back, David. What did you learn from it, though, as a television bloke?
I think that there was not an enormous amount of revenue, ultimately. And people don't tend to sort of read long-form articles on desktop.
They didn't have $1 million talent contract like us.
No, they... Exactly. Exactly.
What do you mean, nor do we?
What?
We don't have a... You're telling me we don't have $1 million?
No, we don't have $1 million talent contract. I hate to break it to you. We have to pay for the cost of making our TV show, Rog. I've explained it 1,000 times already. So people are not, like, behaving on the internet as they used to. They don't read long-form articles on their computers, on their desktops, Rog. And, you know, adjusting Grantland for mobile was an issue. Obviously, Bill Simmons left. He was the heart and soul of Grantland, more than the heart and soul of Grantland. He was every organ of Grantland, including the appendix, which doesn't do a lot. And he left, and it felt inevitable that it was going to go, even despite protestations from John Skipper that he was going to keep it going. I don't blame ESPN either. I must say, I don't blame them. A lot of people saying, what do they think they're doing? It's ultimately in business. You sometimes have got to make some tough calls, and you've got to say, is this going to grow? Is this going to be a growing concern? You can't run businesses these days, not in a Fortune 500 company which has shareholders, and run a business just because you know emotionally think it's the right thing to do. None of these companies, none of their shareholders give them the luxury of doing that.
So my big takeaway is that creativity can be a hard fit within large organizations, templated formats.
Well, it was never run as an entrepreneurial business, really, Rog. From the start, it was supported by advertising, and it was a talent deal with Bill Simmons, and a very appropriate talent deal to keep Bill Simmons, to give him something he really wanted.
What do you mean it wasn't a business? Do you mean there was no strategy behind that half a page advertisement for podcast?
What, giving two bald men a football podcast?
No, I mean advertising it once in the New York Times. That's brilliant. No, Gilded Age of podcasts.
I don't know. I don't think there was an entrepreneurial business plan to go and grow it. I think it was a talent deal, and it was part of a talent deal.
I will miss it terribly. And I think the sadness is compounded by just how crappy a week it's been for New York sports fans.
Yeah, it has been a crappy week. Poor Mets. Except for the Knicks fans, Roger. They're enjoying their new Knicks.
We sullied the Knicks by having Carmelo Anthony on the show.
Yeah, I know. Probably waiting for the curse of Rog.
In a century of Knicks low points, this is possibly the worst. We've got... Who's coming on next week?
Alexander Ovechkin.
We're sulling them all. Yeah. There's not a single sport we won't transcend to destroy franchises.
It's going to be interesting. The Mets, Rog. Poor Gary in accounting. Oh, he just doesn't have a spring in his step anymore, Rog. The Mets lose the World Series to the Kansas City.
What a tenacious outfit, Kansas City.
Wiz. No, they're not the Wiz.
Victory.
The Kansas City Royals. It'd be amazing if the Wiz turned up and beat the Mets in the World Series. It'd be quite a result.
Victory after victory in a style Alexi Lalas would describe as proper American.
Yes.
They might just be the most American team in sports. Whenever I saw their outfits, I thought their outfits were fantastic. But when I see that KC hat, mm-hmm. I always wonder whether Keith Costigan wears one.
Yeah, I love it if they call them outfits. I don't think they call them outfits.
Wait, do you not think Keith Costigan, the ginger prince of Fox Broadcasting, has got like a case? It's his initials.
Oh, yeah, you're right. The KC.
Whenever I watch them, I thought he actually sponsored them at the outset. Better news sent to us by @BrianBergstein.
Okay.
It's my favourite news article of the week, David.
Oh, this week in baldness, Rog. Did this involve mice? That's what I want to know, because we only listen to experiments on baldness that mice have participated in.
Well, not lead.
Lead. Researchers at Carnegie Mellon University have come up with a method for using 3D printers to fabricate plastic hair, a technique they call furbrication. Is that a pun? Which can allow bald men to mix up their look and match their hair color and style to their outfit of choice on a daily basis. Now that is bald denying. I don't care how fashion forward that is. That's bald denying.
I've got to tell you,
I can't stand with that.
I just changed the way I think about it. First of all, there's two sections of the New York Times that I never ever read.
Yeah.
One's the automobile section.
Yeah.
Never ever open
I like
in my
it.
House.
Yeah.
You think? The other's the science section. But when I read this technological breakthrough, I realised I need to change my Neanderthal thinking. Can you imagine having a tweed toupee one day?
Nope.
A brown corduroy?
Nope.
A brown corduroy toupee the next day?
It sounds like they've found
Summer
a buyer, Roger.
It seems like
you're going to be a client.
Can you imagine having seersucker hair? It's just an amazing world.
With a patch on.
Where do I sign up for this wonderful program?
You're going to look ridiculous. It's sort of like in the Hunger Games, you know, the people in the future. It looks like Hunger Games stuff.
Oh, maybe there's an Effie trinket just living inside of me, David.
Yeah.
Corduroy, yeah.
God, I hope so. I hope so, Rog. Okay, a raven early in the pod today. It's from an anonymous GFOP in Chicago. It's the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Sucker, Scribe, Raven of the Week. I love this change in format, Rog. This person writes, when you announced #BlazerCon, I knew I had to be there. One problem, I live in Chicago. And when I told my wife I was spending hundreds of dollars to fly to New York to watch two British guys talk about soccer in Molly Ringwald movies, that's overselling it. Her reaction included more disbelief and disgust than a Jose Mourinho press conference. I have nothing to say. So, to get to BlazerCon, I had to do what I imagine Davo does whenever he wants to make a great TV show. find some sucker to pay for it. That's my business plan. Since I work around the fringes of sports marketing, I crafted a very professional looking email to my boss highlighting how BlazerCon had collected an all-star lineup of athletes, executives, and brands to debate the future of soccer in America. That's all fine and good, but this is the social media age. I can only imagine the horror of my superiors upon catching me in an Instagram wearing a Harry Kane jersey, chugging Malbec, and singing World War I era hymns at the pub with Rog. So to really crank my BlazerCon up to 11, I needed to get pre-approved for the entire Men in Blazers vibe without raising red flags. So I enhanced my application for funding with a few creatively worded touches. To allow for heavy intake of pies and beer, I said BlazerCon would offer a weekend-long brand immersion with iconic soccer sponsors like Guinness and Dub. To cover for the evening happy hours, the I pies. Said the event included networking events with top global media like NBC's Rebecca Lowe, Fox's Alexi Lalas, and Charlie I.A. Red.
Charlie I.A. Red.
I even built in time for sad naps by saying BlazerCon included an examination of the physiological impact of sports fandom on human biorhythms. Well, send my blazer to the dry cleaners. I was approved. Right until you decide to read this on air and some GFOP in the finance department moves to terminate my employment. I hope they like Guinness and pies. Cheers. See you in New York. Name withheld in Chicago. Oh, that's dedication, Rog.
Oh, that letter gets a Guinness philosopher patch of the week, David.
Yeah, excellent stuff.
We can't wait to see you in Brooklyn, Mr. Name Withheld.
Introduce, give us the wink. The dog barks at midnight. We won't reveal your secret. The complete BlazerCon schedule with panels and times is now available on meninblazers.com, Rog. There will be beer, there will be pies, there will be singing and dancing. Tickets to BlazerCon, November 13th and 14th in Brooklyn, are available on our website, meninblazers.com. There are only a few left, actually three. Three tickets left, and we may be sold out by the time the pod is released.
Oh, I'm honestly quite excited, David. Do you relieved. Do you have tingling nipples, or is it just me?
No, I don't. My nipples don't tingle, Rog. It's not one of my erogenous zones.
I just say when you nipple...
Not one of my zones.
When your nipples do not tingle...
Not my zone. Back of my knees. What? That's a zone.
You got one foot in the grave, mate.
Nipples, not a zone. Never has been a zone.
Honestly.
Never been a zone, my nipples.
God, life is not worth living without some TNs to the football.
Poor producer Lexi, producer JW, found that difficult to listen to. To the football, we have a packed show,
Rog. We're all human.
We have nothing to say about Liverpool's 3-1 victory over Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Nothing to say.
Sam Allardyce's
nipples.
We break
down Arsenal's second half offensive explosion against Swansea. And we're joined by Leicester's favourite son, not Jamie Vardy, Rog, the one and only Arlo White, to discuss the third place Foxes, their hot start to the season.
We're going in deep.
MLS playoffs, Abby Wambach retires, and a Sepp Blatter interview that's as revealing as it is ridiculous. What we actually call a Sepp Blatter interview, Rog. To the football, we're now 11:38 of the way through the Premier League season. Crack open the Guinness, Rog. We've got a lot to talk about.
I'll just say, David, what is the Premier League without Tim Sherwood?
Oh.
Somehow it all feels just a bit lesser this week.
It's a little bit lesser. Cheers.
To Tim Sherwood.
To Tim Sherwood.
Wherever you may be. Yeah. Before we get into the footy, there was one article that I do think is worth mentioning. Daily Mail, your newspaper of choice.
No, Premier League. I prefer the Telegraph.
Sees 150% increase in US audience size. Our audience, David, the football audience in America, it's a niche. It's a growing one. One of the questions I'm most looking forward to discussing with Premier League chief Richard Scudamore in Brooklyn. How long will it be until the Premier League projects that there'll be more people watching the big game of the weekend, say Chelsea-Liverpool, in the United States, than there are in England? I bet the answer's about 5 years.
Yeah,
By my actuarial
tables.
Scales.
Do you have your actuarial tables?
Yep.
Bring them to the interview.
I spend 5 minutes when I wake up every morning projecting my own death.
Okay, let's get this brief 45-minute conversation about Chelsea's loss done with. Rog, Chelsea 1, Liverpool 3, Jurgen Klopp's side gegenpressed their way to 3 points in West London after falling behind to a fourth-minute, way too early, Ramirez header. Two goals from the diminutive Philippe Coutinho and one from substitute Christian Benteke secure the first league win, Rog, of the Klopp era. It lifts Liverpool into eighth. Jose Mourinho's side remained in 15th place. Mired in 15th, but they remained in 15th place, Rog.
I still think I'm going to wake up one morning, get out of bed, kiss my wife, look at the league table, and see that Chelsea were in the top four. It was all a dream, David. So. We're just dreaming,
we might
right?
get to sixth.
find it so hard to believe this Chelsea implosion is real, ongoing, unstoppable forces have been released. I mean, this game, 15th place, hosting 9th, it was the equivalent, from a form perspective, of one blue turd emoticon playing football against the equivalent of a red turd emoticon. But because of the context and the narrative, it was without a doubt the biggest game of the weekend. And boy, oh boy, did Jose Mourinho arrive looking haggard and burnt out?
Oh, he had big rolling bag management issues, Rog. He didn't roll that bag very effectively. He had to take it up the stairs, take it around the corner. He jammed it on the corner. He tried to cut it too fine a line. He didn't take the racing line, Rog.
I tried on the show to do a compare and contrast to Jose Mourinho's arrival at Stamford Bridge during the golden title-winning days of last season. Only to discover when I looked at the footage with JW.
He was just as depressed last season.
Just as depressed last season, too.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fascinating. But he took the bench alone and soon joined by his subs, who included Cesc.
Everyone's on the naughty step, Rog.
Not Mikel, not Willian.
Yeah, well, Willian.
Not Ramirez.
Everybody else will be.
He'd elected those three. We're going to win that midfield battle that used to be Chelsea's by right, Davo. Last season, this stat's amazing. Chelsea scored 12 times in the opening 15 minutes. This campaign, before the Liverpool game, they'd only scored once in the first 15. And here, they did so within 4 minutes. Euphoria!
It was a good goal. Milner over-pressed on the right wing. Over-Gegen-pressed, Rog. Azpilicueta, you know, past the halfway line.
Uber-Gegen-pressed.
Yeah, Uber-Gegen-pressed. Azpilicueta, probably for the only time in the entire half, maybe the entire match, was past halfway. Great ball in. Ramirez arriving late. Oh! He does look a bit like Inspector Gadget with that neck extension.
That was a fine header. Mm-hmm. Mourinho oddly high-fived nobody on the sideline. His imaginary friend is perhaps his only companion on the sideline. How did you feel like, when that ball went in? Well, aside from do not score too early.
I tweeted instantly, if you go back and try look at my timeline, crap, way too
How
early.
How did you really feel? That's what we talk about. Don't score too early.
That was my first...
12 times they scored in the first 50 minutes. It was game one. Did you give a little fist? But they were playing well. They had Liverpool on the rack. Did you? Oh, yeah. Back to old days.
I gave a fairly repressed cheer. Partly it was the early kickoff, Rog. So people still sleeping in the house.
A
little
Dean
repressed
kind of
one. But it was very, very early. I realised that Liverpool were there to go and play. The goal even came from Uber Gagan pressing. And Chelsea beat it at that moment. But I was worried at that point, at that very point when I sent that tweet, at the pressure that Chelsea were going to put under by going in the lead. In front of the Liverpool faithful as well, right in front of them.
The goal empowered Chelsea to sit back. They became like an NFL team in prevent defence. And Liverpool flickered the ball around with attempts at skill and a desire to regain possession once it was lost, but without any kind of sharpness in the final third. The game actually reminded me in the first half of Liverpool under Brendan Rodgers in their first season. Mm-hmm. When they looked to win the possession battle rather than score the goals they needed to win the game. And they took it in turns to miss woefully or knock the ball into an enormous Benteke-sized space in the box. And the first half just slipped into what it was, mid-table fare. 19 average outfield players, Coutinho, Hazard, Oscar, Firmino's neck tattoo, all mediocre at best. Only Willian really stood out. Honestly, that first half, I would have preferred to watch Klopp and Mourinho in ISO for 45 minutes.
Yeah, I saw it a little bit differently than the commentary team, Rog. I understand Chelsea definitely did sit back a little. They do what teams do naturally when they score too early. They sat back a little bit. But Liverpool, again and again, dispossessed Chelsea from the ball. So, yes, Liverpool were woeful in the final third, but Chelsea simply could not hold on to the ball. They could not string passes together. You know, Mikel, Zuma, Terry, Cahill,
blessed.
Even Ramirez,
John Terry, blessed.
Incapable of holding possession of the ball. Willian, a class apart, able to use his speed, able to turn out of the trouble, able to go and keep possession of the ball. But Chelsea couldn't hold it, and that was the seed of their demise.
Because on the stroke of half time, if you're a Liverpool fan, or in the inexplicable amount of time added on, if you wear Chelsea blue, the oddest drama, I would say, of the season so far played out, because Jose Mourinho, re-emboldened, did his I'm leaving for the locker room early, this half ends when I say it ends. But then he made the fatal error. of turning round at the last.
No, you don't look. You don't want to look. Well, nothing will happen if you don't look.
Like Lot's wife in Genesis, turning round to look back and glimpse Sodom's destruction and instantly being transformed into a pillar of salt. Why did he look, David? Why?
Yeah, and Chelsea, not for the first time this season, unable to sort of go into a half, unable to finish a half without conceding a late goal. Another giveaway up the field, yet another giveaway in their own half, and Chelsea gave away possession and the goal was scored against them.
Philippe Coutinho, yeah. 710 minutes without a goal. The knock on him is he doesn't score enough, but boy, is he a gent for the big occasions. Tiny gent, massive occasions. You should get extra points for firing the ball past display John Terry.
Yeah, twice. And it's that jink, jink, joink move he does, Rog, that's so good. Jink, jink. He just does that little jink and you just know what's going to happen. And he gets in that timing. It's like watching an elite server warm up. Is you just know as they go into their wind-up that it's going to be an ace because it just looks so in rhythm and it looks so in timing. And there it goes, top right.
We've talked before that even on teams you hate, there's players you cannot help but love. Paul O'Neill on the Yankees team was the first. I just thought his psychotic intensity won me over. Juan Mata, of course, that cuddly little Ewok. Coutinho, I love you. I love the way you play. I love the pluck. I love the courage of a gunslinger. Jose Mourinho didn't like you quite as much as I did. Tried to show no emotion, but he knew he'd have to turn his team talk around at the very last. Long-time listeners know, what does my father say, Davo? Worst time to concede a goal?
Ivor Bennett time, right before the half.
Yeah, forces the coach to make up a new team talk on the spot, my father's convinced. At halftime in those locker rooms, 1-1. Chelsea, calm for much of the game, and then to fall apart the last. Liverpool, poor in the final third. Coutinho, a moment of brilliance. Which team would have felt happier with the performance in that locker room?
Oh, definitely Liverpool going in 1-1, without a doubt, Rog. And I think there was a certain element, and this isn't a complaint. I think the refs actually called this game very, very well. Yes, the goal went in after 2 minutes, but we've seen that happen before. It's somebody said to me, it's not a crime, Davo, when I made a joke. None of this is a crime. This is football. But I felt they called it pretty well. But referees sometimes decide to let players be physical and let players be aggressive, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they hand the cards out early. This was a game where they didn't come out with the cards early, and they allowed this played into Jurgen Klopp's game plan. They gegenpressed very hard. They were very physical. They won't be allowed to be this physical against every team every week, but it really worked and it played in their half, and they got even more physical in the second half.
That Coutinho goal, it did more than equalize the scores. It transformed Chelsea because the second half, cue nerves, cue anxiety, they're a different team that at times looked like either fatigue, lack of interest, or giving up. The BBC peddled rumours, I'd say irresponsibly, of unnamed players saying they would rather lose and have Mourinho fired than have Chelsea win. Blatant rumour mongering. But you have to say, elite teams, Madrid, Munich, AC Milan back in the 90s, they always added new blood after winning a league. They never sat pat. They never wanted the players to rest easy and coast. The second half, it did look like one team was coasting. And Liverpool's second 45, it was honestly like watching their 11 line up to take backwards trust falls into Jurgen Klopp's arms. Yeah. Skrtel in particular, he was a man possessed.
Well, look, the one player Chelsea did bring on, the one piece of new blood was Kennedy, and that was actually the brightest addition in
58 minutes,
along with
the ongoing humiliation of William. Reigning Footballer of the Year, Hazard. Off you go, lad. 19-year-old Kennedy comes on.
Yeah.
And then he came on just in time to witness that prison shiv, that prison yard moment.
Oh, it was magnificent. Honour amongst killers, Rog. The truth is that Skrtel and Costa both give each other as good as they get. There was a first half incident where Costa, shoved high, one would say, by Skrtel into the hoardings in front of the Liverpool fans, into the mouth. And second half, Costa with slow motion looked a little bit worse than it did in real time, but a little bit of a kick out, definitely, on the floor. Skrtel started to make something of it, but then helped Costa to his feet as the ref came over. And I thought that was a great moment. It's game recognizes game. It's ethnic cleanser meets ethnic cleanser. Killer meets killer. Honour amongst thieves. I loved it, Rush.
You say that, but I also saw it as a symbol of something that's rotten with Chelsea. Like Mourinho's act has staled, so is Diego Costa's for me. The talk about him needing to play on the edge to menace his opponents. It's just declined into a sad Defang farce. I mean, no one is afraid of him. That's what I saw with Skirtle picking him up and lifting him up. I'm not scared of you. Defenders also know that the Arsenal game and the villainy of Gabriel's red card, they can pretty well do whatever they want to Diego Costa now.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever, the game became a knife fight. At J Monkey tweeted us, it was a knife fight, to which Coutinho came armed with a machete.
Yeah, he did come armed with a machete in the second goal. Very, almost like a mirror image of the first, Rog. Another giveaway ends up on the outside of the box. This one with the added bonus of a bank off John Terry.
Yeah, Rog. John Terry of last year would have blocked that with ease. He would have thrown himself headfirst at the ball. A third goal soon followed. On this one, John Terry and Cahill less defending, more just flinching.
Yeah.
As Liverpool's two subs combined, I'm finding Benteke. Chelsea at this point defending as if they were hell-bent on creating opportunities to practice their kickoff routines more.
Yeah.
Poor Mourinho, Davo. Listen to that. Poor Mourinho on the sideline watching his own red wedding, despondent with the odd stained patch on his shirt. Oh, God, you do exist. Was that his blood? Was that his
tears?
We
hope so.
What was it, Davo?
We have no idea. Could have been his soul, Rog. It could have been a symbol. It's almost Kafka-esque. It could have been a spider, Rog. We have no idea
what
it was.
All we know is that we're 100% sure it is now Arsene Wenger's Facebook profile, that image. It is remarkable to watch, David. It's remarkable to watch.
Can I say something about that second half? What I found as I was watching the second half, remember the Carling Cup, the Capital One Cuppity Cup game last year, where Chelsea frankly won the physical battle against Liverpool? Lots of complaints, some of it not legal, but it was a physical battle won by Chelsea. I feel like, obviously, Jurgen Klopp came in with his uber gegenpressing style. I think the Liverpool players remember that game, and they out-physical Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea have lost games at Stamford Bridge this season. For me, the most alarming aspect of this game, which is why it's not only about Mourinho, it's also about the players, is that Chelsea were physically outmatched at Stamford Bridge, and I can't remember when I've seen that.
It's remarkable to watch. Said on the show, it's like witnessing Nelson Muntz morph into Milhouse before your eyes. And it is amazing. Bullies being bullied, as in life, so in sports.
It's tough to be evil when you're not threatening anyone anymore, Rog.
This morning at a press conference, John Terry said, "The public can't be happy to see Chelsea losing." There's a great tweet from Graham Parker, the Guardian writer. He said, "The occasional cutaway shot to John Terry's reactions is like Schadenfreude ice cream for non-Chelsea fans."
By the way, he also hit back very hard at the assertions that the Chelsea player had gone out and said that he'd rather lose for Mourinho rather than win for him. John Terry actually said that he's never been involved in any sports team ever where that would have stood with any of the players, where any player would have got away
John
for talking
Terry,
in such a way.
John Terry, noted coach killer. Let me ask you a different question. Did that look like a team battling to save their manager?
Yeah. I mean, I think they came out and I think they made a lot of endeavour. It looked like a team who were very, very nervous. It looked like a team, actually, who are not particularly good on the ball except for key players. And I think that's very true. Chelsea haven't had to be that good on the ball. They've switched around. Look at the number of different lineups Chelsea have played this season. You know, Mikel hasn't exactly had a vote of confidence in him for the last 2 years under Jose Mourinho, the last 6 years as a Chelsea player. And suddenly he's in there anchoring midfield in a huge game. I don't think any of the players, I think Mikel is surprised. I don't think any of the players around him expected that to be what's going on. Zuma playing right back, that's not a position he really feels supernatural in.
US Women's National Team star Heather O'Reilly tweeted, and I love it. She said, "Do sports build character? Or do they reveal it?" Whatever Jose's become, and this is what's fascinating to me, he's become what he most despises. This season, six losses.
A loser.
A specialist in failure, yeah.
Yeah.
With Manchester City legend Frank Lampard looking on and Klopp trolling Chelsea by subbing on Dejan Lovren on the end, the ultimate in derision, Croatian Freddy Adu. Chelsea left. David, this is amazing. They need 2.2 points from each of their remaining 27 games to hit the 70 points that secured United the final Champions League slot. And then we get the post-match, the mentally shattered Jose Mourinho, just Oliver North in questions, an epic interview, instantly on par in my mind
to say.
With Frost Nixon, Malcolm X, Alex Haley. Well, how do you understand that? Because that was just the moment for me. Press
I didn't
conferences
know.
Are better than football.
Here's
I
the thing.
Agree with that.
He did do a longer post-match conference, not the one in front of the step and repeat, but the one in front of the press, where he did talk at length. I don't know if this was a particular message to BT Sport. He's been somewhat critical of their pundits. This was a BT Sports Step and Repeat. I don't know if he didn't want to give them any fodder in the studio. It plays in during the post-match show on BT Sport. I don't know if he didn't want to give them any fodder. But he does owe it not only to Chelsea fans, he owes it to football fans who basically pay his salary. And he owes it to the Premier League, I believe, to go and talk and answer questions in that press conference, whatever press conference it is.
If I were as a Chelsea fan, that press conference would have made me panic the most, even more than the play, Davey. Because Jose, whatever he is, he's always been the master of the last word, the caustic quip, the put down. I mean, he's the kid in the class that has always got the right thing to say.
Yeah, but he's doing that at the point that he's winning. He's not used to losing. He's never managed failure, Roger. I mean, he's never managed this.
He enforces control through quick mind and sharp tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been left with a bewildered, confused, cornered, dishevelled man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's Michael Douglas in Falling Down.
Although, to some extent, by your own admission, that when you looked for to see how depressed he looked last season when he was arriving at the stadium, these are things that we now project on him a little bit more
because the press conferences last season were absolutely...
He was winning, though, Rog. It's a very different thing.
But you live by the tabloid headline, you die by the tabloid headline, and the English press have turned on him. They're destroying him before our eyes week to week.
And to the English press are delighting in it, Rog, because they never liked him very much before.
They fed off every single word he ever said.
I don't know that I see that, Rog. I think that this is delightful to people, as you just admitted yourself. It's delightful for people who not like Chelsea. As an element of sport, though, as a sports fan, the complete collapse of his mental toughness, of his team's mental toughness. He once called luck the assist. It was like the secret assist was luck. Chelsea lose key moments of the game. They are suffering bad luck again and again and again. But that's not unlucky. That's a lack of mental toughness. They fail to make anything good happen for themselves.
Ian Dark, the great Sir Ian, tweeted, "Does Jose Mourinho realise how much it would be appreciated if he just sometimes said, we were second best today, no complaints?"
Yeah, he doesn't say that a lot.
No.
He really doesn't say it a lot.
Chelsea head to Stoke City next weekend, the team that beat them last week in the League Cup. Mourinho has been handed a one-match stadium ban for his comments to the referee at halftime two weekends ago. Will he be in place, Davo, after the international
break? I mean, nobody knows. Anybody who claims to know what's going on outside of Roman Abramovich is just talking out of their arse, so I have no idea. I do think that there are three elements that play in his favour. One, the fans still seem broadly behind him. Secondly, I think the players have gone out of... It would be very easy for the players to go and make a statement that they're not behind him or to be quite silent. And I think the players led by John Terry have made that statement. And I think thirdly, Abramovich made a very big deal about bringing Mourinho back to the club and not chopping and changing the whole time. However, I'm not saying that this is going to keep him for years. I think that without a doubt, if Mourinho doesn't make it into the Champions League for Chelsea, and that's going to be very, very hard to get up to fourth place, I don't see it happening. He can't possibly stay. It's just whether or not they want to bring in an emergency manager, you know, for the rest of the season. I don't see it happening, but maybe it
will.
Here's
what I think is critical. You don't want a Mourinho for a relegation dogfight. It's like buying a Lamborghini Aventador to go off-roading on a rutted, potholed rural backwater road. He's got no knowledge. He's got none of the skill sets or the motivational nuances needed in such dire, flat, desperate circumstances where you just have to tooth and nail and just gut it out. Chelsea need a Poulis.
Yeah,
they need
maybe.
A Big Sam.
Maybe.
They need a Nigel Pearson, David. They need a relegation dogfight.
If what Roman believes he's in is a relegation dogfight, and I must admit that I watched very closely the results from all the teams below them in the table this weekend, as relieved that we remained in 15th, so maybe we are there. If he believes that this is about short-termism, about what's going to happen this season, then you know what? Jose needs a sabbatical. He needs to go off and somebody else needs to come in. Bring in Pearson. Bring in somebody who can be just as charming with the press, and let's have Pearson come in and manage this team for the rest of the season. That would be excellent.
Let's stop sullying ourselves at the bottom. Let's talk about the top of the table.
I'm exhausted, Rog. Swansea 0, Arsenal 3. 3-0 to the Arsenal. Another offensively potent performance from Arsene Wenger's men. Goals, non-Arsenal-y goals, Rog, from Olivier Giroud, Lauren Koscielny and CONCACAF's own Joel Campbell keep Arsenal level on points with league leaders Manchester City. They've also closed the goal differential gap to just 4.
A game Arsenal of last year would have struggled through. Swansea did the double last season over this Arsenal team. And it augured especially badly that just a week after I worry aloud about Arsenal keeping their squad healthy, the Ox and Theo Walcott suffer muscle damage in the 3-0 Capital One humiliation at Sheffield Wednesday.
Yes.
But it didn't matter. This was a, listen to this, Davo, it was a routine Arsenal win.
Yep.
I just use those words. I used those words, a routine Arsenal win with a routine goal, as usual, from Olivier bloody Giroud.
Set pieces, header from a set piece, Rog. You know, fairly physical performance for them. You know, once again, a game where first half, 0-0, you'd normally think Arsenal are going to wilt a little bit under the pressure. We've seen this before. And yet they come out and they score three crucial goals. Great timing. Joel Campbell scores a goal as well, Rog. Great performance.
If you ever needed proof that Arsene Wenger is a footballing genius and that Arsenal are this season's team of destiny. After 4 years of irrelevance and absolutely the stench of failure surrounding him, Joel Campbell is thrust into the team amidst prophecies of doom, and he scores a beautiful goal, arguably man of the match, with a fine strike that just absolutely stunk of CONCACAF thunder. If you watch carefully, what I loved about this goal, Ozil and Sanchez, they had their own little celebration away from the rest of the team. They high-fived about the roles they played in making the goal, and that says a mountain
a lot about Arsenal,
about the creative culture at Arsenal. Ozil now more assists, 23, than any other Premier League player since he arrived in September 2013. I will say Campbell had a celebration of his own. He stuck a pacifier in his mouth that had been down his shorts for 70 minutes plus, Davo. A sweaty pacifier.
That Ozil statistic is amazing, because it's not like Ozil has been in peak form ever since he arrived in England. He's had long stretches of not playing very good football at all. But the fact that in that period he has created more goals than anybody else in football, phenomenal.
I feel like we're saying this every week now, Davo. Best week ever for Arsenal. Jose Mourinho humiliated. Arsenal a comprehensive win. United looking laboured. Even City seeming like a different proposition without Kun Aguero than with him. Dare Arsenal fans' dream.
They're playing the best football, and even more significantly, they've found a few plan B's and a plan C and a plan D, and they've got such a deep squad because Arsene has rotated it so well. It's coming to bear right now, the fruits of everything that's happened in the last few seasons of the way that he's built this squad and played all these players. Yes, not enough to have the kids beat Sheffield Wednesday in midweek, but that first team squad, so many good players who can slot in, who can play, give them all kind of different shapes, all kind of different lineups.
What I love about this Arsenal team is that they make wise decisions about when to attack and when to sit back, compared to last season when they just naively try and do the former and be caught out glass jaw style. I mean, I do fear injuries for this team, but let me say, I would love Arsene Wenger mocked, derided, most vehemently by the Wenger Out segment of the Arsenal faithful.
Who are still there, by the way.
I'd love him.
Amazingly.
I'd love them to turn around, deliver the Premier League title to the club in his 20th season. It would be more than a sporting victory.
Uh-huh.
Be a triumph for the spirit. One of the starkest declines of the season. Mm-hmm. Swansea. Poor Gary Monk. Oh, wilting away.
I forgot he was in the Premier League, Rog.
Oh, do you remember when they used to pass so beautifully? When Montero would burst down the flank, when he'd destroy defenders. The passing style has been found out by their opponents, and with Bafétimbi Gomis labouring, they've just got no plan B.
Well, Shelvey put a great pass through to him in the first half, Rog, but
Bellerin.
He just couldn't finish it.
Oh, American Pharaoh Bellerin. Four home league games, drawn 2, lost 2, their worst run under Monk. We've got to start praying for Ginger Gary.
Oh, Manchester City 2, Norwich 1. A tough game to watch on television if you don't really like pastels, Rog. The Canaries give the league leaders all they can handle at the Etihad. An authoritative Nicolas Otamendi header appeared to be enough for Manuel Pellegrini's side, but in the 83rd minute, Joe Hart made a mess of an innocuous Rog Robbie Brady ball, allowing Cameron Jerome to level the score. In the game's waiting moments, Norwich's Russell Martin made a brilliant save on Raheem Sterling. The problem is Martin is not the Norwich goalkeeper. Yaya Toure converted the ensuing penalty and City stay top.
Oh, as close as an English Premier League game can get to an NBA regular season clash. It was pretty well nothing to see for almost the entirety of the game. Then everything just exploded into life in the last couple of minutes. City didn't have a great deal to show, even though they had three quarters of the first half possession. Credit Norwich. They defend with such organisation, such tenacity. Mm-hmm. And once again, Yaya looked like a diminished force. Wilfred Bony, a big man with little confidence. And Kevin De Bruyne, second bum league game on the run. Mm-hmm. But then Otamendi, Davey.
Yeah, you need, if you're going to win the Premier League, Rog, you need your central defenders to score goals. Koscielny has knocked in a couple this season. And Otamendi, this was a great goal. This was a long-range power header.
He headed it further than I can kick it.
Yeah, pretty much.
But then Joe Hart. Yeah. Oh, Halloween weekend, and Joe Hart decided to come dressed as 2014 Joe Hart.
It's odd because we haven't seen a Joe Hart howler for a while, Rog.
Oh, it was a very odd howler. He went a routine cross. He just leapt up and then dropped the ball.
Realised he was going to carry it into his own net, I think.
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah. In his mind, I kept assisting. Cameron Jerome kept scoring. And then there was a weird moment when he let the ball in. Mm-hmm. It was almost like the game turned into an EA Sports glitch. And he just started to run across his own goal line manically. It's a very odd thing. Looking on YouTube. But the game then just degenerated into a battle to prove who could be England's crappiest goalkeeper. John Ruddy went walkabout in the penalty area as if he's been studying graduate studies at the Joe Hart School of Goalkeeping Excellence.
Yeah, that was a mistake matriculating there.
Yaya Toure converted the penalty after the Russell Martin handball and conspired to argue publicly with Pellegrini when taken off in the 94th minute. Still time for Joe Hart to show his split personality, redeem himself, with a fine save from Martin Olsen right at the death. And he then managed to laugh at himself and his mistake with the English press. He went up to them and said, "Don't be too hard on me, lads." Showing that he can be funny, Davo, in places other than the
tunnel. Crystal Palace 0, Manchester United 0. Said I was looking forward to this game, Rog. Despite the offensive impotence, Louis van Gaal's team remain in fourth place, just 4 points behind City and Arsenal.
This game was bad. It was 1877 cars for kids bad.
That bad.
Ex-United stars are just taking it in turns to rip on United's play. Paul Scholes mocked the lack of creativity and risk-taking. Andrei Konchelskis, he said the players are forced to act like robots. And what did Louis van Gaal counter them with?
Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me.
Yeah, in a sinister yet sensitive manner of a man who's tried yet failed to destroy all traces of human emotion in his psychological makeup. You can tell it's getting to him. And so it's sure, last six games, United have won just once, failed to score four times, 341 minutes without a goal. This is Manchester United. They've not even managed one face-saving Anthony Martial wonder strike. A deadening statistic made worse by the League Cup humiliation at Middlesbrough. "We're Manchester United," the fans sang. "We want to attack." When United play this badly, there can only be one man of the match, David De Gea, who kept Palace at bay. They had a lot of ball in the final third, but again, they toiled to finish. They'll feel hard done to with 1 point. United reject Wilfred Zaha, unbelievably motivated in this game against a team who brought him and buried him, poor kid. He did a round of press before the game with the sole intention of burying the rumour that David Moyes had benched him permanently for seducing his daughter. Hashtag modern football. Brutal statistic for Alan Pardew's side. Palace haven't had a single Premier League goal this season from a traditional centre-forward.
Well, at least Man United are defending well. I'll take that as a Chelsea fan, Rog. West Brom 2, Leicester 3. The Foxes come from behind. Should we just say, shouldn't we just assume at this point that the Foxes are going to come from behind? Thanks in part to the Premier League's pizza rat, Jamie Vardy. Equal parts feral and fearless. Vardy scored for the eighth straight game to bring his league-leading tally to 11. Leicester up to third in the table, Rog. They're only 3 points behind City and Arsenal. Playing great football.
Yeah, fairy tale continues. If Chelsea weren't unspooling, Davo, Leicester City would be the story of this season. We will talk more about them with Arlo White later in the pod. But I just say, Jamie Vardy, only the third player to score in eight successive Premier League appearances. It's remarkable. I don't know if he's wearing Harry Kane aftershave or what he's done. We'll ask Arlo. Yeah. But Ruud van Nistelrooy and Daniel Sturridge are the only other two. That bloke's got the finishing skills of a continental and the teeth of a modern Englishman. 10 points gathered from losing positions for Leicester. An amazing statistic. 15 of the last 17 goals they've scored have come in the second half. At Munbagri tweeted, "Leicester City is like that unexpected party crasher who's hung around long enough that now they're helping serve drinks."
Now, the biggest story of the season is Chelsea, and Leicester deserve to be the biggest story of the season. The other story that's flying under the radar is what's going on at Tottenham, Rog. They won again 3-1. They extend the league's longest unbeaten streak to 10 games. So un-Spursy. Battering Villa behind goals from Moussa Dembele, Dele Alli, and a revitalised Harry Kane, Rog. Spurs up to fifth in the table.
Aston Villa caretaker manager Kevin McDonald said before the game, Villa need to produce top four form to avoid relegation. They did. Unfortunately, the top four team they channel was Chelsea. In front of their new watching manager, Remy Gard, they held Spurs at bay for an entire 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Dembele charged through the Villa rear guard and went five-hole on Prey for Guzan. Dele Alli, what a game. A sweet, composed finish made it 2-0. The game did almost flip. There was an IU deflected, wistful long-range shot. Spurs wobbled. Aston Villa fans started the chant, "We only sing when we think we might draw." But then Lamela found Harry Kane, who blasted his fifth in five games. We'll just say Remy Gard has a lot of work to do before Villa host City at the weekend, including teaching his own team how to spell his name. Villa misspelt Remy Gard on their welcoming press release. It's going to be fascinating watching him. He's the 11th of Arsene Wenger's ex-players to go into coaching. He's a sophisticated operator. He turned Lyon into a young outfit on a tight budget. And they challenged Paris Saint-Germain as well as anyone could during that petrodollar fuel transformation. Talking about transformations, for Spurs, the North London derby against Arsenal awaits. They have the longest current unbeaten run, 10 games. They are just 1 point from the top four promised land. The North London derby, it's going to be a game for the ages Sunday, Davo.
Yeah.
And we've got Eric Dyer, the Dyer Wolf, joining us for a special pod extra later this week.
Well, can't wait. Watford 2, West Ham 0, Rog. Two goals from Nigerian striker Odion Igalo, Rog. See the Hornets past the Hammers of Vicarage Road.
Yeah, remarkable double defensive synapse by Andy Carroll. We praised him last week. This week he tried to do a Johan Cruyff turn on his own goal line.
Yeah.
And ended up doing a Johan Santana turn. It's a terrible day for Man Buns, and they've had a lot.
Yeah, bad days.
Terrible days. As Shakespeare said, the fool doth think he is wise, but the wise man bun knows himself to be a fool. You've got to credit Watford in this game. Kike Flores, I think he should be in the contention for the all-in running for the manager of the year. The way he prepares that team. At the final whistle, he stuck his tongue out. For a moment, he looked like Billy Joel's younger, drunker brother. They face Leicester next weekend. And I will say this, Davo, now, I think they'll fancy their chances.
Yeah, of all the promoted teams, they sit in 11th, Rod, higher than both Norwich and Bournemouth.
Up the cherries, Rod. Up the cherries.
Southampton 2, Bournemouth 0. Southampton 2, the aforementioned Bournemouth 0, Rod. The Saints win the South Coast derby behind first half goals from Steve Davis and Graziano Pella. Despite having the better of the second half, the Cherries couldn't find a way through. They've lost four of their last five and sit 1 point above the drop zone.
Southampton, that first half, some of their best football of the season. I've got to say, if they can keep their energy and focus for a full 90 minutes, they're going to be fascinating to watch because they are tactically wonderful when in full flight. Bournemouth fans sang Harry Redknapp's name from the stands. I think they did it to wind up Southampton because Harry Redknapp, the Bournemouth native, almost destroyed that club. Some are beginning to think that the supporters are actually chanting for him to replace. I find it hard to believe, something I just can't conceive of, Eddie Howe. Bournemouth host Newcastle next Saturday in a massive, massive six-pointer relegation dogfight. Up the bloody cherries.
Newcastle 0, Stoke 0, Rog. Despite a team sheet filled with exotic names like Boyan, Shaqirian and Arnautovic, the sexiest thing about Stoke was English goalkeeper Jack Butland, Rog. He produced a series of impressive saves to salvage a point for the Potters. The pointless Newcastle above Sunderland, but it's not enough to get them out of the relegation zone. Everton 6, Sunderland 2, Rog. How did this go that far down the rundown?
Read it to me again.
Everton 6, Sunderland 2, Rog. Everton hang a touchdown on Big Sam and Sunderland. They missed the extra point, though. Aruna Kone with a hat trick. Everton up to ninth. Rog,
what do you want to know?
Oh, take me through it.
I think we used up all of our season's goals in one game.
Yeah.
But I'll take it, Dave.
I watched the start of the game and I was worrying for you with the, you know, Sunderland twice off the post early. Coming back in, they scored a goal in Ivor Bennett time from Jermaine Defoe. They sort of tied it up at the beginning of the second half. I was worried for you.
It was a lot closer than the scoreline suggests at 1 minute. But so many wonderful sights and sounds and smells in this game. Jerry D.
That was a great pass. That was the pass of the game, and there were some great passes in that
game. I just loved his first goal since his return.
Yeah.
I mean, and then the celebration again, that awful, ill-judged, gunning people down celebration. Yeah. It was so great to see. He's a beautiful Scouse Catalan.
Uh-huh.
The game was briefly interesting. Sunderland actually outshot Everton in this game.
Wow.
And their wing-backs confused the Everton defenders at first. They hit the bar twice. Defoe with a classic Defoe of old goals. Stephen Fletcher, Robert E. Lee, leaping over Funes Mori to nod home and equalise. Mm-hmm. But then Everton, I'm not sure if Everton exploded or Sunderland imploded, David. Coata's own goal, that De Leo.
That pass, Rog, that was a thing of beauty. And there was another amazing pass later in the game from Lukaku. And the fact that that was not the best pass in the match is a testament to how good that De Leo ball was.
I just loved when Lukaku scored. His immediate response was to shout at his teammates to play quicker, confident Everton would score again. And he was right, they did, over and over again. We had Kone's zombie walk goal celebration twice.
Like that.
That stonking header off the sexy Lukaku left-footed cross.
Oh, that was amazing.
Oh, it was as beautiful as a Miami U kickoff return. And Kone just became hat-trick Rick, the best player on our team. At T Waywood tweeted me, early congratulations to Mrs. Bennett on the birth of Kone Bennett in 9 months' time. I am elated for Kone.
Yeah.
I mean, he's battled back from a severe knee injury that could have been career-ending. Many Everton players believe his career has ended on the field before the past couple of games. And alongside Lukaku, he's become cheekily imperious. Two strikers. I like the Cara Delevingne and St. Vincent of the Premier League. Mm. Though, to be clear, we've got to remind ourselves, it was only Sunderland.
Yeah.
And a pity, Sunderland fans. Last week's glorious 6 consecutive win against Newcastle feels like decades ago. They woke up Monday morning with the reality, second to bottom. Dave, I was in Charlotte this weekend.
Yeah.
I went to the NASCAR Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
They have a serious race simulator.
I've been there too.
It's amazing. And I went on it with these serious NASCAR heads. They're very different people than I've ever really encountered before. Let's just put it that way. And they asked me what my name was on the committee. Have you sat in the race car and raced?
Yeah, done it.
And I put my name in as Romelu.
Yeah.
And then proceeded to crash 15 times in 3 minutes and just make everybody else in the race, and these guys were serious racers, have to keep returning to the pits. And as we all got out our cars, one guy had to be restrained by his mates as he screamed, I'm going to find that Romelu and kick his ass. Thankfully, I think the name I chose threw him. Let's just say he wasn't looking for a stooped English bald.
So the bar mitzvah was at the NASCAR Hall of Fame?
No, I just went there.
Oh, good. That's an interesting location, I was thinking. Okay, big news from US soccer, Rod, the end of an era. Last week,
Sunil Gulati retired.
GFOP, Abby Wambach. Way worse than that, Rog. Abby Wambach, international football's all-time leading scorer, announced she will retire at the end of this calendar year. Her final game is scheduled to be December 16th against China in New Orleans.
Oh, she retires as the most prolific goal scorer in international history. 184 goals in 252 games.
Wow.
Paul Carr says 77 were scored with a head.
Wow.
That total alone would rank her 7th all-time in US women's national team history. More importantly, she retires as she always dreamed she would, as a winner. Someone who persisted in defeat and propelled her team to victory, willed them to victory. And anyone who spent time with Abby will vouch for this. Her retirement is simply a new beginning. I've got no doubt we'll see her launch a second career that will have as wide an impact as her first did on the game of football. We just joke about Wambach for FIFA president, but
I'm not joking, Rog. I'd love to see that. Talking of the FIFA presidency, news from FIFA land. Exiled president Sepp Blatter
has given music for
what may be the most on-brand interview ever, given that his brand is delusional and drunk on power. Blatter told Russian news agency TASS.
God, I'd love to be interviewed by TASS.
It says TASS right
here. Why have we never been interviewed by TASS?
Blatter told Russian news agency TASS that it was decided. Well, that's Ian Dark's sadly deceased
dog. Yeah, the Russians felt so close to Ian, they named a whole news service after this dog.
It was decided Russia would host the 2018 World Cup before the vote. His current suspension is nonsense, he said, and that this February, quote, if God is with me, I do hope that I'll be back as president of FIFA.
Yeah, he said some amazing things.
Number one, not sure God is worrying about that.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to be the biggest thing.
God's stressed out about the Qatar World Cup. By the way, in this interview, he did say 2022 World Cup was meant to be in the USA. When they cooked the votes before the vote, he then attacked Platini, demanded he be restored to FIFA. Some great quotes. FIFA is not the Swiss bank. Yeah. FIFA is not a commercial company.
I would like it to be.
And no, then no, 1 second later in answering the next question, he said, since I became president of FIFA, we've made FIFA a big commercial company.
Wow.
He also did one of the saddest interviews in our favourite column, Financial Times, A Lunch With.
Oh, we love that.
In which he blamed America for his downfall, American corporations, American politics, pushed Platini under the bus. And what I love is, as he's kind of nearing the FIFA moon door.
That was very American of him.
It seems clear Blatter's preparing to name names to protect his legacy. Yeah. I'm hoping his end goes down like the end of Scarface in a blaze of coke-fueled self-destruction.
We will see, Rog. In MLS, the conference semi-finals head into their second leg Sunday in the Eastern Conference. The New York Red Bulls return home with a 1-0 advantage over DC United, Rog, thanks to a Dax McCarty goal at RFK. And Montreal Impact head to Columbus after coming back from behind, so Leicester-y of them, to beat the Crew 2-1 in Montreal. And in the Western Conference, Seattle hold a 2-1 advantage over Dallas after an 86th-minute Clint Dempsey free kick earned them the win at CenturyLink Field. And the Timbers and Whitecaps go to Vancouver after a goalless draw in Portland.
Oh, it's fascinating watching the LA Galaxy eliminated. Dave, amazing photograph of the playoffs. They will not be beaten. Eric Freeburg winds up to fire the winning shot for Seattle against the Galaxy, and the cameraman caught Steven Gerrard just standing there stationary with just this look on his face, powerless, impotent, not actually trying to run to track back and watch it, but just a spectator like you and me looking on in horror.
Amazing.
He's hinted next season may be his last. He said, going on the road, playing on turf, playing at altitude, playing in humidity in the MLS, those are the hurdles I've never had to face. And I wasn't aware I was going to over the last 3 months. He was obviously well-briefed before arriving. I love watching football on Unimas MLS playoffs. It's like football meets Dora. And another good thing, there's no 1877 Cars for Kids commercials.
Yeah,
to
we
boot.
Love that.
In other MLS news, Jason Kreis, relieved of his duties at your beloved
NYCFC.
Sad to see such a young bloke, a young American talent, have his wings clipped. Many MLS watchers see it as evidence the club is being run from Manchester. I mean, I say we don't see training, we don't live within the club culture. Any football club culture can reject a young coach, no matter how bright. See Andre Villas-Boas at Chelsea, at Tottenham. It's going to be fascinating to see how that club handles the next steps and who is to follow. One gentleman we should congratulate, Davey, Bob Bradley.
Yes.
First American manager to lead a team into Europe. His young Steybeck Chargers. Steybeck!
Yeah.
Tipped by many to be relegated in the Tippeligaen.
Yeah.
We still got to buy the rights to the Tippeligaen. Surprised all comers and came third. Bradley is a free agent at the year's end. Whether he actually leads the team into the Europa League qualifying in July remains to be seen. But his team have made it. It's an amazing sporting feat. I think he should go into the Championship. I pray he gets a Premier League job, but I think it may be time for a move.
We did one Raven at the top, another Raven right now. This one from Dave in Boston, Massachusetts. One of the greatest stories of this young Premier League season has been somewhat neglected by you two glabrous gentlemen, namely Leicester City. Well, until we interview Arlo White.
Going deep.
A club that most pundits had slated for relegation has been the most consistently entertaining and pleasantly surprising EPL outfit thus far. I mean, who would have thought that they would be one of only two squads to have only one loss through the first 11 weeks of the season, along with Spurs? Jamie Vardy putting up goals like vintage Rude, Riyad Mahrez slithering along like Georgie Best, and Danny Drinkwater providing some excellent comic relief with the quintessentialist of British names, all adds up to an irresistible treat every weekend. I'm a diehard Liverpool fan, and if Liverpool were not playing, I would typically watch a game involving one of the Manchester teams, Everton, Arsenal, or Chelsea, just to spend 90 minutes booing them and wishing ill will on their entire squad. Nonetheless, anytime Leicester are on TV now, I find myself gravitating to their match, no matter who else is playing at that time. I thought about what contemporary American sports team I would compare Leicester to. Explosive offense, porous defense, 19 goals against in 11 matches. They're never fully out of a match, and they're simply a really exciting surprise team that is easy to root for. Eager to get your take on this, and I look forward to hearing both of your opinions on Leicester's early season surge. Who is the team, Rod? What American sports team are they like?
I mean, it's not just this season, but everyone picked them for relegation.
Yeah.
Last year, they were almost relegated.
They looked
the
like they
escape.
Were going down, yeah.
To me, this is like Cool Runnings with less bobsled. They may be like Southampton last season. That's who they may be, an early season delight, but they fall away. But Southampton did it with youth development. Leicester just don't have that. To me, this is all about team chemistry, collective clicking. Is it 2011 Butler in the NCAA?
Yeah, Butler had that fantasy run, Rog. But who cares about our POV, Rog? Not I do me. Think we need to understand what Leicester have achieved this season from a deeper perspective. So without further ado, let's dial up our guest today, yes. Leicestershire's greatest export ever, just edging out Walker's crisps.
And Engelbert Humperdinck.
He's the voice of the Premier League here in America, calling games every weekend from gantries around England for NBC Sports.
Have you got us Tim Howard?
No. We welcome to the pod the man who coined the term meaty French forehead, the one and only Mr. Arlo White.
Hello, chaps.
All over this country right now, there's families sitting around in Rockwellian kind of painting settings.
Yeah.
Sitting down for their dinner, and all they're talking about is Jamie Vardy. Leicester City lost just one game against Arsenal. Implausible third in the league. Mm. Their delightful knack of just never saying die. The most American trait, one could argue, that's made this country great. Arlo, asking you randomly, how do you understand what's gone on there in the first 11 games? What are the factors that have propelled this Cinderella run?
I'm struggling to comprehend it, Rog. I really am. And, you know, for Jamie Vardy to be America's sweetheart this early in the season, it is just stunning. Or ever, in fact. They are just playing superbly. They have an indomitable spirit. The games are weirdly fascinating and entertaining. They come from one goal deficits. You know, they don't start playing till they're two down. The atmosphere,
they're not interested. They're not interested till they're trailing.
Exactly. The atmosphere at the KP Stadium is amongst the best in the league at the moment. The place is jumping. The gantry, as I've seen on recent games, actually shake. The cameras shake on the gantry. We're there for the Man United game later this month, so I can't wait to experience that. And you've got a couple of players in Jamie Vardy and Riyad Mahrez who've scored 18 goals and provided 5 assists between them in the opening 11 games. It's absolutely remarkable. But if you count it back to the start of last April, when Nigel Pearson was still in charge, and they won, 7 of the last 9. If you put April, May, and August, September, and October, it's champions form. It's absolutely ludicrous.
They deserve a trophy. They deserve a trophy. So I found myself, when we're commentating, well, what we call commentating, Arlo, not what you would call commentating, over Leicester highlights, I found myself comparing Jamie Vardy to Suarez, that aggression to get on the ball, the way he runs into space. He's just so aggressive. I love it. But what kind of a player do you see when you see Jamie Vardy? What makes him such a good Premier League footballer?
Well, I've seen him for a while, and obviously he was slightly more raw when he arrived at Leicester City. Who took a punt on him? Let's not forget. I've been to Brackenmore Lane, Davo, the home of Stocksbridge Park Steels.
Steels.
In my early career, before I got paid to report on football, for BBC Radio Derby against Alfreton Town. And look, I'm not going to be too stereotypical about it, but it's a little grim at Stocksbridge Park Steels and Brackenmore Lane. The pie was fantastic. So for him to be released by Sheffield Wednesday, his dream seemingly in the gutter in terms of being a professional footballer, and to have made his way from Stocksbridge Park Steels through Halifax Town, when they weren't even a terrible fourth division side, they were a non-league side by this time. And then to Fleetwood Town, and then for a championship club in Leicester City to take a £1 million risk on him. The story is remarkable. So what do I think when I see him? I see everything that Nigel Pearson and the Leicester scouts saw, which was raw pace, tremendous desire, a determination to put the football world right for rejecting him as a youngster. Just that general determination about his personality that is now added poise, skill, and that sort of ability.
We call him James Vardes, Real Madrid.
James
Vardes. But at the same time, he's 28. The Premier League, let's just say it's had its share of one-season wonders, its Roque Santa Cruzes, its Meet Jews. Is there something that feels different to you when you watch Vardy? I mean, in 2010, as you said, Stocksbridge Park Steel scored just 5 league goals last season. Is he the Premier League Seabiscuit?
Vardinho, we're talking about.
Vardinho.
Here,
yeah, I like Vardinho.
As he's known locally, yeah. it remains to be seen. I don't want to sit on the fence about this because he is, and I think the key aspect of it is he is 28. So you've got this amazing emergence and confluence of all these aspects like confidence, pace, skill. And it won't be long before some of them start to diminish. So we're hitting a sweet spot here, a perfect storm of everything coming good for Jamie Vardy. And I don't know how long it can last for. I think Leicester fans might be concerned that, and not so much about January. I think he's nailed his colours to the mast and Ranieri says he's not going anywhere. When you see newspaper reports linking a Leicester City striker with Real Madrid, you do think you've entered the twilight zone. But there must be...
Well, think how the Stocksbridge Steels fans feel.
I hope they've got some sort of kickback off this. I really do. Maybe Fleetwood Town are bound to have some sort of sign-on clause as well, so they'll be looking forward to any potential sale. I wonder if he goes at the next summer, gets the big move, gets the huge money, and we'll see how long this can last.
How much do you fear the transfer window? Today's Daily Mail, Manchester United are monitoring Leicester City's Algerian winger Riyad Mahrez.
And they'd be right to do so, Rog, because he is tremendous. And I watched him play for the football club in the Championship. In many ways, he's a better footballer than Jamie Vardy. I know they play in different positions, but he frightens the life out of fullbacks when he's running at them. He's so skillful. When he drops shoulders, people fall off their seats at the KP Stadium. It's remarkable that they got him. In this day and age, with the scouting software, with the DVDs, you know, the plethora of football available on every channel that every scout has, that he fell through the net. It's remarkable. So between them, and we talk about, you know, Leicester City's success and this rise and this wonderful story, is it sustainable? Probably not, history would suggest, but it is a team effort. But these two are... very, very good, and they are the class of this team, and put together in the same side, an absolute joy to watch.
So Claudio Ranieri, when it was announced he was coming to Leicester, I'm not sure that the welcome that the fans were laying out to him was overwhelming.
No.
I'm not sure there was that much excitement in the media about it, the sense that this is a retread of somebody, a name we've heard around European football for a while. But what is it about his style that matches up so well with this team?
It's a great question. And the appointment initially from such luminaries as Gary Lineker, who went on Twitter to voice not necessarily his displeasure, but just his lack of enthusiasm for the move. It didn't create any excitement at all. And Leicester have been there before. They appointed Sven-Göran Eriksson. The Thai family that owned the club appointed Sven-Göran Eriksson. And you kind of got the sense that they weren't necessarily making the appointment out of any great knowledge of the game, but they were listening to agents that were selling their clients' wares. And this sounded like one of those. And as you say, it was a retread. But it's worked out very well. What I think he's done here is changed very little. I think Ranieri came in and saw the enthusiasm, saw the style of play, saw the energy in that squad, saw the togetherness of a group of players, added to it but a few relatively big names where Leicester is concerned, and hasn't changed a great deal. I think he's pleasantly surprised many of the so-called Blue Army.
I mean, I love quotes by Chairman Mao, I love quotes by Winston Churchill, and I love quotes by Tony Pulis.
Three similar men.
And Pulis said this weekend, before Leicester battered West Brom, he said, Claudio Ranieri benefited from all the work Nigel Pearson's put in. It's very, very nice to step into a football club where everything's in place. And that club looks like everything was in place. But let's not forget the work that Nigel did in his 3-4 years at that club. Is that true? And have you seen any difference in the style of play at Leicester since Ranieri's taken over?
I think that's... and Tony Pulis is a card-carrying member of the British Premier League Managers Club. I think he will always give credit where credit's due, particularly if there's another British manager he feels a kinship with.
He might actually print the cards. He might actually manufacture them, Arlo.
He's the treasurer, at least, if not the president of that club.
Yeah.
So, but I think he's right. And Nigel Pearson, it's very interesting that the perception around the world and the perception in the United States of Nigel Pearson amongst people who were probably exposed to him for the first time last year is almost universally negative. And his actions last year, don't get me wrong, at times were appalling. He let himself down, and I hope that he's learned a lot about it because, or from it. He is a very good manager. He is a galvanizing figure for footballers. He's a footballer's manager. And when you look at what that style is of Leicester City, and a lot of it is about togetherness and a lot of it is about energy, you have to be motivated, highly motivated, and you have to trust in what you're doing to play that way. And Nigel, they're still playing in his image. He is still seen as the architect of that team.
Moment of truth time for you, Ollie. You sitting down?
I am.
How long does this run last in your mind? Will it get bogged down in the frenetic holiday schedule?
It could do, and it probably will. I think Leicester fans would look at a game like Watford at home at the weekend, and as soon as you say in this situation, well, that's a home banker, isn't it? Oh, definitely, definite 3 points there. Watford, even though they're showing signs of life, the result that doesn't go their way will be one that perhaps you don't expect. The one game they have lost is a game they could have won. I think they saw the Arsenal game as a free hit. They'd started great, put points on the board, playing good football, scoring goals. I think they really went at Arsenal. They were 1-0 up. They hit the crossbar and 10 to go 2, missed a sitter to go possibly 3, and then 10 seconds later, Theo Walcott scored for Arsenal. And Leicester carried on playing that way, and they made
a pact in blood to never go ahead in a game again. Always leak at least one, maybe two brothers, and we'll take them all down. They learn.
It is amazing, though, that they're sitting third in the table. They've scored 23 goals, which is right up there with the teams around them. They've conceded 19. We talked earlier in the pod, we were talking about Chelsea, and talking about the importance of the mental element of the game. And, you know, just how, you know, last season Chelsea were a team who showed incredible mental toughness at key moments. And this year that's gone to completely the opposite. Leicester have just been so mentally tough. They've won so many close games.
You look at Southampton last year and people just started to think, hold on, they can get fourth. And then there was a run which meant that wasn't going to be possible. And I think Leicester will go through something similar. They've beaten Sunderland, they've beaten Bournemouth, Villa, Norwich, West Brom. They've beaten Palace at home. West Ham away, but early in the season when West Ham was struggling at home. They came back brilliantly at Southampton. They've still got to play Man United twice, Man City twice, Arsenal, and this Chelsea run can't continue, even though, Davo, you predicted at the start of the season.
Thank you very much.
Money on that, by the way, which was absolutely extraordinary insight. But they've got to play Chelsea twice. So they've got some really tough games.
A couple of quick ones, and then we're going to let you go. I do have to ask, the profile of MLS, the playoffs in full thrall at the moment. I know it's on Sky Television. Are they registering in England?
They are. I wouldn't say it's the talking point by any stretch of the imagination, because there's so many storylines all the time in the Premier League, particularly with Chelsea's, you know, start of the season, which is dominating everything, and Jurgen Klopp coming into the league, which is a huge story. So it wouldn't be at the top of the agenda, but people are always looking and seeing how Steven Gerrard's doing, how Frank Lampard's doing. So that ended with the end of the regular season, then the knockout round. But I think people do watch on a Sunday night. Yeah, I genuinely do. And people are aware, more so now than ever, of what's going on in Major League Soccer. And I think people have got their heads around and got over the fact that there's a regular season, then playoffs. You know, it happens in sports here like rugby league and rugby union. People are used to it. People love their NFL in this country. So why not have playoffs at the end of the year? But people are keeping on top of it, although it's probably not the first thing that they look at in the morning when they go to their computers to look at their football news.
And talking about great American sports leagues like MLS, this weekend, you're at Wembley. You went to the NFL game.
Oh. Yeah.
Do you go with Dixon and Lasso?
Lasso was pre-booked, but Dixon did go, yes.
I've got to ask you, four games NFL have taken over to Wembley. Is it a circus coming to town that everyone rushes out to see? Or are the real NFL week-to-week kind of grassroots narrative following English people who are just getting sucked into the sport, like the Americans are getting sucked into the English Premier League here?
It's very similar. You know, you walk around the streets of Manhattan on a Saturday and Sunday morning. I used to do it around Seattle on a Saturday, Sunday morning, and Chicago when I lived there. You see Premier League jerseys wandering the streets of those big cities. When the NFL comes to town in London, and this was the first time that I'd gone to a stadium for a game like this as a fan, I'd called three of the Wembley games and called five Super Bowls. So you're in the stadium 3 or 4 hours before kickoff, so you don't get to see, you know, the streets of London beforehand from a taxi, or, you know, the pre-game parties, the tailgating that's going on. And I couldn't believe it. There were NFL shirts of all 32 teams wandering around the streets of London. The tailgating was intense and packed. The game was, I mean, from a connoisseur's perspective, was absolutely awful. Lee, we had to sing for our supper, and I took Lee down to the sideline during the game to be interviewed by Sky TV. And whilst he was being interviewed, there were people in 15 different NFL jerseys leaning over, shouting, "Dicko, come on, you gooners!" And it was absolutely brilliant, and he took it very well. But it is, it's getting more and more popular. And I interviewed and did a hosting event with Roger Goodell on Friday morning, a breakfast in London at the Mayfair Hotel. And we joked that I'd asked him 7 years ago about a London franchise. And he said, well, yeah, you know, maybe one day in the future. And he said even he didn't believe it at that stage. But I think they do genuinely believe it now. And it was announced today that Twickenham, the home of English rugby, yeah, is going to host a game, at least a game a year for the next 3 years. Wembley's signed up, and Spurs will be signed up from 2018. So there's three different venues in London hosting NFL. It's building up to a franchise.
That New England Patriots Leicester City partnership looks pretty like king power. Can't be too long, Arlo. With you commentating, it'll be like heaven. It's great to catch up with you. I just say, bear down, Arlo, bear down. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, maybe next season, Rog.
And Godspeed to you, Arlo. Thank you so much.
All the best, chaps, and all the best with BlazerCon as well. Sorry I can't be there, but all the best of luck with it. It sounds like a fabulous event.
We will do something very special with you in February. Oh, what a man.
Yeah.
He'll be at Stoke watching them beat Chelsea this weekend.
Yeah.
And then off to the North London Derby on Sunday.
Yeah.
He'll be doing three men in the booth. It's all over the Ted Danson equation, David.
Well, Lasso is definitely the Selleck.
He's such a Selleck.
Yeah. A mini contest, Rog. As we mentioned, BlazerCon very close to selling out. But even if you weren't able to get a ticket, you're in luck. The GFOPs at Mini USA are giving away five pairs of tickets to the event, Rog.
They're like to the Willy Wonka Golden Ticket Factory.
We all know soccer has been America's sport of the future since 1972. All you need to do to win these tickets is tell us why the future is now. You must enter on the website miniusa.com/BlazerCon. We are not accepting entries via Raven, so visit miniusa.com/BlazerCon to enter. Five pairs of tickets. That's amazing, Rog. BlazerCon Song Contest, Rog. We're now ready to announce one of our BlazerCon Song Contest winners. Oh. As you'll recall, we asked you to pen a tune that captures the unique experience of being a football fan in America. The early mornings, the Guinness for breakfast, tying yourself to teams thousands of miles away, your hometown MLS team, the US men's national team, the World Cup champion, US women's national team, all of it. The winner of our grand prize, whose tune will be performed at BlazerCon, is Yesterday's Game from GFOP Ben Clark in Brooklyn.
Is that an original composition?
It seems that it is. We're going to play a little bit now to give you a taste.
When a lonely old night becomes a bright blue day, with a Guinness to drink my red, white, and blues away. Finish 3-2 with no W and a backline looks to blame. Dos a cero is yesterday's game. Dos a cero is yesterday's game. I've been waking up for years now around 7:45 on Saturdays to see the way the game is played when it's in its prime. I've seen Man U straight dominate, but I know they've had their problems. I've seen Chelsea turn into a pile of with John Terry at the bottom.
That is not suboptimal, mate.
Yeah, it was good. We're going to have a bunch of other winners, Rog.
I've got to say, what's his name? Lloyd Webber entered, didn't
he? He did.
Yeah, he did. It was crap.
Your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. Manchester United versus West Brom, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, Saturday on NBCSN. Stoke versus Chelsea, not in the face, 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday on Network NBC. Oh, my God, we had to put that on broadcast. Arsenal versus Tottenham, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, Sunday on NBCSN. What a game that's going to be. All four of Sunday's MLS Conference semi-final second legs will be televised. The New York Red Bulls versus DC United, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. Columbus Crew versus the Montreal Impact, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. FC Dallas versus the Seattle Sounders, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox Sports 1. And the Vancouver Whitecaps versus the Portland Timbers, 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox Sports 1. Rog, there are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items big or small, just click off the Emporium page, and Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage, which allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog?
A book.
Oh, I love a book.
Little Victories.
Oh.
By Jason Gay.
Oh, my great friend Jason Gay.
Wall Street Journal sports columnist.
Love
GFOP, stand-up bloke, and a droll, wise writer.
Yeah.
His new book, it's a meditation on life, manhood, death, regret, and meaning. Written in his own kind of self-deprecating style. He talks about all the stuff we don't really talk about in life. Testicular cancer, his father's death, and his mourning, his battle with his wife and fertility medicine.
Oh, he wrote about that also in last weekend's Wall Street Journal.
That was an extract,
beautiful,
mate.
Beautiful.
That was an extract. That's called an extract.
Oh, it was beautiful. Oh,
subjects that touch so many of us, but we kind of suppress talking about them publicly. And I love the book because I admire him. And it's an unexpectedly personal, emotional, and occasionally heartbreaking read.
Wonderful. I'm putting in a book too, Rog. Picked up this book over the weekend and read it in two sittings. Our Man in Charleston, Britain's Secret Agent in the Civil War South. I love the Civil War. I know a number of our GFOPs are interested in the Civil War. I've always been under a sort of a delusion, Rog, that the English withheld support from the Yankees and gave a lot more help to the South during the Civil War. And yet, this is the amazing story of Robert Bunch, who was the British consul in Charleston. He arrived there as a young man in 1853. And he was a double agent, Rog. He was a secret agent who cozied up with the slave traders and made them feel like he was their mate, and then ended up feeding all of that information to the Northern Army, Rog.
So he says.
Well, no, it's very, very well documented. A brilliantly written book by Christopher Dickey, Rog. You can now watch entire episodes of our crap TV show on NBC Sports Live Extra, Apple TV, and Roku. It's also up on our website, meninblazers.com. Also on meninblazers.com, a place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner, Guinness. And check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. We've just posted a BlazerCon playlist, Rog. meninblazers.wikispaces.com/awonderofthemodernworld. Follow us on Twitter, @RogBennett, @meninblazers, @embassydavies, on Instagram, @meninblazers, @embassy_davies. I very rarely do anything on Instagram anymore. I've just forgotten to. And like us on Facebook. We've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOPs Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk, Rog.
Oh, we should say, before we go, we're going to be on Seth Meyers tonight.
Oh, my God.
Which is too late for you to do anything about. You can't avoid it. You may have watched it already by accident. I'm just warning you.
Yeah, okay.
Not you, the listeners.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am. Oh,
don't
sorry,
watch
I can't
Seth
avoid
Myers
it.
Tonight.
Okay, yeah, don't watch that. Vendorpunk Rog.
War Pig.
Who wants to sex Matumbo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
Corduroy is coming.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu fight in America.
Oh.
I'm sorry, NASCAR drivers. I really am.
I love that, Rog, and I love you
Didn't
too.
Didn't know what I was doing.